Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Swagoo and Perk. A new show led by its namesake host, former NFL veteran and analyst Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and NBA champion and analyst Kendrick Perkins. With new episodes every Tuesday morning, Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey with can't-miss conversations, and welcome in top sports and celebrity guests. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, hockey has returned to ESPN. The NHL has started back up, and that means you can stream your team's games on ESPN Plus, from the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning to the brand new Seattle Kraken. Subscribe to ESPN Plus so you don't miss a goal. Also, be sure to follow In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with Linda Cohen and Emily Kaplan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Nothing, man. I'm excited about this Foxworth Friday. There is some fun stuff out there for us to get into.
Yeah, man, this is, I talked about this with Vinny Goodwill on Wednesday, but like, this NBA season has been a first-class hoot so far. But of course, it's like football season, so ain't nobody really got the energy to get into it. Are you up on my man, the Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards?
I listened to you and Vinny, but I mean, generally, I'm up on the Ant-Man, but I know he got banged on, and then he followed it with looking for a victim, that somebody got to catch this since I caught it. But I mean, generally, I know Ant-Man is probably your favorite basketball player in the NBA right now, just personality-wise. But other than that, I don't got much for you.
Listen to this quote he had on Wednesday night about Giannis. Have you seen this?
No.
Quote. And when I say quote, I do mean quote. Okay. With a guy like that, you can't stress about him scoring. That's what he's going to do. Like 7'2", 280 pounds. We put 4 people on him, and he still scored a ball. I was telling Leo, I'm like, bruh, I ain't never seen nothing like it. We could put like 4 people on him. He might miss it, jump right back up, and dunk that. There's nothing you could do about it. Him scoring the ball, it doesn't amaze none of us. That is what he do. I can't say we contained him. He went for 40. The game plan was to not let him beat us, and we came out victorious. He's amazing. There's nothing I can say about him. He's unstoppable.
That's incredible.
This is what he said to reporters.
Oh, that's incredible. I mean, there is like no desire to polish it up or nothing. I appreciate it, man. I love it. Be yourself, man. We are in a time where when we gonna find out. That's one thing that I've learned, is you might as well be yourself, especially if you're like a real legitimate celebrity. Because if you're not gonna be yourself, with the amount of media that we have out here, and the amount of people with cameras, and the amount of people with platforms who be talking, they can't wait to tell their story about how they interact with a celebrity. People gonna find out who you really are, so go ahead and be that person all the time.
Yo, the thing with Anthony Edwards, it's like, people knew he was gonna be good. Like, normally when they know you were gonna be good, they start working on you, right? Start, you know, getting you a little polished, because I think there's a value to the polish. So like Lamar Jackson, for example, who is getting a little more polished by the day, but I mean a little more polished by the day. Like, people have made the call along the way, now we just gotta go let him be him. But also, people didn't think it was going to turn into this. Right. Like, if they had thought it was going to turn into this, they'd have been working on him in a different way. And he played for Bobby Petrino, who don't really care about nobody else. He ain't worried about your development as a human. Come on, now he's trying to get you out here playing ball. Anthony Edwards is so unimpressed with all of this and all of us. And I love it, because we're really not that impressive, I promise.
I know, I respect that about him, but I think that I'm just trying to figure out how that happens, because you're right. Most of those guys have a little bit of polish, no matter what they grew up around or grew up in, especially in basketball. Like, you 6'2 at 12 years old and cross the people over, they're going to start polishing you. So I guess I'm trying to think of what it is in him. Is it just like, I would assume that he wasn't so aware to be able to see that all this stuff was BS. Because, you know, when you're that age, you're like, all right, this is how NBA players act. How do they learn to talk like that? And then you were like willing to do all the things that you do. But maybe it's just a genuine, deep down self-confidence. That's like somebody come to you and say, let's do this different. Nah, I'm Anthony Edwards. I do it this way. As long as these buckets keep going in, we good.
I don't even think he care about if the buckets go in part. Yeah. I think he like, psh, what you talking about, man? They love my swag. Right? Like that. He trying to figure I don't really understand what you talking about. Everywhere I ever been, they love how I get down. why would I change that?
But the thing is, when he's watching basketball growing up, and doesn't he see, like, even people like LeBron? Like, LeBron was polished, and you learn about LeBron's background, and you hear LeBron talking trash to people from the sideline, and you realize LeBron, he ain't that polished, but he know how to put that polish on for you. So I just assume a young Anthony Edwards is like, oh, so when you do interviews, yeah, you gotta use the right tense. I'm good on that.
Nah, let me tell you, if he was really concerned about those kinds of things, he wouldn't have gone to play basketball at Georgia. You know what I'm saying? That is not a man who has thought too much about what is considered to be the path to success. That ain't the game, and I love every minute of it. Like,
at least cut the out.
but counterpoint, Marshawn Lynch is the wildest situation to me because, I mean, keep in mind, Marshawn Lynch got like a DUI from when he was in Buffalo. Like, all of this stuff, didn't flip it, and then look, we all looked up, and everybody loved it. Like, across the board, everybody loves it. He doesn't get any of the hell anybody else does. And it's just because, for whatever reason, people like him. And you can fast forward to 2021, and he's sitting up with Peyton Manning cussing on television off that hen.
Yeah, I mean, he's acting in HBO award-winning shows. This man, the NFLPA, decided he was going to be some sort of ambassador of sorts. Like, he's just getting checks everywhere because he didn't want to do interviews. And sometimes he say run through a face. Also, he's a great football player. But, like, he's getting all his post-career attention because he likes Skittles and say whatever he want. Drink Hennessy.
Hold up. I'm going to read to you a press release that I received because Beast Mode Marketing picked up a player. I'm not familiar with the young man. His name is Justin Flo, and Beast Mode Marketing is going to handle his name, image, and likeness stuff, right? So I am simply going to read to you the first three paragraphs of this press release. Beast Mode Marketing today announced that it has signed top NCAA college football player, University of Oregon linebacker Justin Flo. Beast Mode Marketing, founded by Marshawn Lynch, Brian Shing, and Kevin Parker, will represent Flo for off-field name, image, and likeness marketing opportunities. Lynch, widely known for his on-field successes, has always made central the importance of community and generational wealth building and ensuring that athletes maintain their mental and physical well-being. Lynch founded Beast Mode Marketing Agency to share the lessons he's learned on and off the field with the next generation of athletes. First off, Lil Bruh is a beast, and I mean, we share some of the same folks, and when they reached out, we got on the horn and put a play together. The main focus right now is for him to get healthy, stay healthy, and keep rocking it on the field, said Lynch. All the other stuff, NIL, branding, marketing, will work itself out, but that field in the classroom is where the real work is done. My squad and I are here to help him in any way we can, whether it be getting through these moments in time or ensuring he's making the most out of every opportunity while lifting others on his way. And I felt like that whole paragraph is the full-on Marshawn Lynch experience right there.
It's something I never considered before, because like whenever there's like a celebrity who's starting a company or associated with a brand and they have to have a statement, or not even associated with a brand, anytime a celebrity has a statement, it's normally not their statement. It's something someone else wrote for them, you know? And they write it, and then the celebrity potentially takes a look at it and okays it or makes a tweak here or there, but it's not their words. So I'm wondering if Marshawn Lynch is actually writing his own statements, or if they had to hire another person as part of their communications team to make sure that Marshawn Lynch's brand is not messed up by all your stupid words that you might put in there, or all the sentences you might add.
I think they probably did hire somebody, and it might be the person that wrote the rest of the release, whom I know. And then he was like, no, I got to rewrite that. Right? Like, he's like, no, hey, you start, I'm going to talk you type. Right? First off, Lil Bruh, which is spelled in the press release, L-I-L space B-R-A.
Oh, God.
Like, just so you understand, there will be no misunderstanding about who it is that has decided to drop this quote. It is, in fact, Marshawn Lynch. And I'm just trying to figure out, is it just the strength of personality that he legitimately pulled this off? Like, if you want to know that his get down is different, when the Super Bowl was in Atlanta a couple years ago, I was in town. And that's when me and Pablo were doing High Noon. This was, yeah, we'd already been on the air by now, so we're doing High Noon. And I wanted to show Pablo Atlanta, like, Atlanta I know. You know what I mean? Like, I, you know, so I'm taking him through Southwest. I'm taking him by Clark. You know, I'm, you know, we're going through all them spots. And so Marshawn was doing an appearance at the Athlete's Foot on Lee Street. And my Atlanta people know exactly where it is that I'm talking about. But let's stop and take a moment to appreciate, once again, Marshawn Lynch has got his brand and he's selling his stuff. And he does his appearance at the Athlete's Foot, which I did not know was still in the league. But he is at the Athlete's Foot on Lee Street. The Athlete's Foot on Lee Street is maybe a stoplight or so away from a Church's Fried Chicken location where my homeboy, who was with me at the Athlete's Foot that day with Pablo, was once there, and somebody came in and there was a gay person working at Church's, and one of the customers hit him with a tried and true homophobic slur. At which point, the gay gentleman disappeared and nobody knew what happened. And then the gentleman came from behind the counter with a pot of hot grease. What? That is where Marshawn Lynch did his in-store appearance at the Athlete's Foot on Lee Street in Atlanta.
He tried to hit him with the Marvin Gaye? Like, how you going?
No, that's the next level of the Al Green. Like, the grits Green, is one right. thing. Yeah, the grits is one thing, but I mean, they ain't, churches don't sell grits.
Yeah.
He was trying to hit them with the grease. That's where Marshawn Lynch goes and does his appearance. And I came in there, and I just wanted to see what was going on, you know? So he's there. He's signing autographs. A couple people in his crew saw me and were like, yo, what's up? You know, we start talking or whatever it is. Let me tell you who demonstrated zero interest in talking to ESPN's old Bobody Jones.
Yeah.
Marshawn Lynch. None whatsoever.
I remember Lonnae O'Neal, one of the writers of Undefeated, wrote their profile. And the story she tells about being out there in Oakland hanging with Marshawn and his people is like... Just being so comfortable and like plenty of stuff that
he made her take Henny shots.
Yeah. That's the stuff that made it in the story. I have a conversation with her about the stuff that she chose not to put in the story. Just the level of comfort that he has with who he is. And like, I'm gonna give y'all this. Y'all gonna take it or y'all gonna leave it, I guess, is because it certainly wasn't premeditated. It just so happened. He looked up. He's like, oh, y'all like this. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Oakland dudes are different, man.
Yeah.
Like, you tell me that you are from Oakland, I am suddenly like, oh, okay, I'm probably going to like you. I don't know why. Like, it is the one thing that is unlike everything else. It is the island of misfit toys. Like, every sort of weirdo that existed, like, you take it back like 40, 50 years ago, they got all the weirdos from everywhere shows up there, right? And, like, people you might not think are weirdos, but other people think are weirdos. So this is the same city that's going to give you the Black Panthers and the Hell's Angels, right? Like, that's the get down that you get when you start talking about Oakland. Don't nobody talk like them. And I imagine if you just grow up in Oakland, you're surprised to find out that other people don't kick it like this.
Oakland people versus New Orleans people. Like, compare and contrast.
Yo, I had never thought about that, but the similarities are quite striking. I feel like the difference is less of them in Oakland go to private school, but I went to private school in New Orleans is not the indicator of your personality that you might assume that it is. I don't know anybody from New Orleans, at least Black people. I don't know so much nearly the same about white people, but Black people, it don't matter how smart they are. It don't matter how educated they are. You don't want them problems with them. I ain't met a scared person from New Orleans yet. Like Odell Beckham, you might think whatever it is that you think about Odell Beckham. Go try Odell Beckham and see how that work out. Let me know how that goes.
I think that's true of Oakland, too. Like you said, Black Panthers and the Hell's Angels. And they both are crazy cultural, like legit cultural melting pots where it's like diverse, real diversity, not we live on this side, you live on that side. It's like everything. We just put it all together, and maybe it's separated by race, but the culture isn't.
Yeah, and Marshawn was on there. Did you see him with the Maddens on Monday night?
I saw some clips of it. I didn't watch that.
I got to the end of it. Like, I saw it right where the producers were like, gotta go. And see, the thing is, the producers are saying that, but they don't really mean that because people are like, oh, the FCC's coming in. I don't think the FCC regulate cable. Like, that ain't a concern over here. They be cussing on FX. I don't know why you think, like, Disney would just prefer you not do that, but it ain't gonna cost nobody no money. But I'm watching it, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said something that was very Oakland, and then he hits Peyton and Eli with, you feel me? And they said yes, but their faces meant no. They did not feel him. Not that they weren't trying. Not that they weren't making an effort, but no, they did not feel him. But I'm guessing that Peyton and Eli got a little more in them on this stuff.
They New Orleans.
Than people realize. Right, they're from New Orleans. So speaking of Odell Beckham, they went to the same high school as Odell Beckham. Now, that is not to say that that high school was full of Odell Beckhams. I am saying, though, there had to be like one or two dudes, you know what I'm saying, that were there to give him a little whiff of the game, right? Yeah. Give him a little chance to figure it out. Because I don't know how white you got to be in New Orleans and not get none of it. You know what I'm saying? None of it at all.
Especially during the time when they was coming up. Like, they're probably like in high school, I guess, around the No Limit era, right? That's...
Well, no. Peyton was in college and going to the league. But Eli is right in the middle of that, right? Eli's right there when the Cash Money break out. Eli has heard of the Bunny Hop. Eli knows something about that Josephine, Johnny.
Yeah. Even if it wasn't nationally popular yet, like they always, like they had to bounce. They had all that stuff down there that I'm sure.
They had all that. But come on, we both know, man. White folks go through amazing lengths to hide themselves from these things very often. But I just feel like if you're going to play football, like maybe they was throwing the ball to number white boys. I don't know. It sounds like they school want to win, and that's normally not how the school that want to win operates, right? They typically don't do that. They got some other standards they willing to bend in order to get out here and do some of that winning. But it would not surprise me if Eli Manning knew all the words to Soldier Rag. Like I bet he sneaks up on people with these things every now and then. Or at the very least, they learned how to make their particular brand of herb work in the presence of the folks.
I mean, it's a low bar when you are famous, son of a famous dude. You're a hell of a football player. You brother of a famous dude. Like, the bar is so low for Eli to be cool. He just got to be himself around the black guys, and we're going to be so excited. Like, and say what? Did you see Tom Brady put out that video with, was it Chief Keef underneath it?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And people flipping out like, Tom Brady? Chief Keef? Oh, my goodness. Like, relax, guys.
We require so little of white people. We just want you to, we don't even need you to try. Yeah. Just don't try to hurt us. You know what I'm saying? That's all we ask for.
And like, acknowledge it at some point, because we know that there's no way Tom Brady listened to Chief Keef. He did not edit that video. Somebody in his organization put that out. But we still happy that Tom Brady put that Chief Keef underneath that Chicago victory. Yes. Get him, Tom.
Yes. 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 All we want white folks to do, honestly, is it's... be yourself and let us do the same. And if that happens, it really doesn't matter how you kick it. We ain't judging white people that harshly. We just not those types. You could come in and be, because everybody seems to love Eli Manning, right? Like, you can't seem to find anybody, in spite of the fact that much of his career he has been a bit overrated, right? Which normally draws resentment from the Afro-American community. We don't tend to like it when y'all try too hard to prop white folks up, and we like, can't you see? We normally don't do that. But Eli apparently just comes in there being Eli Manning, you know, be it cool. Like, Archie Manning, I feel like Archie Manning is one of these where I say this about Chris Long. Like, when I talk to Chris about stuff and the way he kicks it, I like Chris a lot. And I'm like, but I like him in a way that makes you be like, yo, your pops handle business here. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a certain vibe that people have where it's not like you cool, but you're like, yo, I see what your pops is doing here. Archie Manning is like Derek Jeter's dad. I really don't understand why that man ain't wrote a book. I have no idea why he don't do seminars. Why he ain't everywhere. Like, look at me. I did that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Me. I educated that young. Where else did he learn it in Kalamazoo? You know what I'm saying? I put that man on gang. Archie Manning is in a very similar way, man. Like, Peyton got all kinds of qualities that we would find wildly obnoxious in real life. But somehow he's made himself into a fairly likable chap.
Yeah.
In a way that I feel like because his daddy had to put him on some game.
Yeah, I mean, his dad was a quarterback of several very awful teams in New Orleans. I'm sure he learned lots of things, and he knew his son was going to be that too. So he started practicing that stuff young. So it's worked out for him quite well, but... I mean, I think the bar, you're right, the bar is so low. We've established that. And we see it, like, if you go to a party and there's one white dude there dancing. You see it on the internet. Don't let a white man hit a dance, a black dance, well. Don't make no money off it, because then we got a problem with it. But hit it well. Just acknowledge, like, we are immersed in white culture all the time. Like, I mean, we're forced to, like, know about things that maybe we wouldn't care about. But for you to, like, take whatever effort it requires to go learn one thing black, don't steal it. Don't go full Elvis, but just learn it. Do it. Show it appreciation and move on. Man, that'll buy you so much.
Bro, they ain't even got to do it well.
That's true.
I got to do it well.
True. That's true.
You got to do it well. All they got to do is try. That's it. White dude show up. It don't matter what it is. He get out there. He can get in the middle of the circle if he wants. You know what I'm saying? Man. And next thing you know, go Logan. Go Logan. You know, like we all gonna be there encouraging, raising him up in prayer. If I get out there doing the same thing,
man, sit your ass down.
Don't let Finn know the words to a song when it come on. Don't let young Finnegan hit them bars on you.
Oh, Jesus.
And I have to be fair, though. I have to be fair. As low as the bar is where white folks, all they got to do is try, and we will accept them in dancing in these circles. The bar, when we show up at they stuff, is even lower, because all we got to do is try. And when we try, we suddenly become the leader of the pack.
That's true.
It don't matter if you can. You go dance at a party with white folks. You do whatever. Rest assured, someone else will be doing exactly what you're doing shortly. Someone else will.
I imagine, like, your vast musical knowledge has probably helped and, like, been a social lubricant in several places in your life. Because you know so much about music that, like, I bet people are shocked when you know more about country music, know more about guitars, and know more about all this stuff than them. I know that if Sweet Caroline come on and I say, oh, 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 white people are like, oh, that song is right. That song don't hit me in the soul at all. But I know if I'm in a room full of white people and I'm feeling uncomfortable, just start whispering it. They jump, Sweet Caroline. They get excited.
Yeah. They don't understand we know stuff about them. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, they think we don't know nothing about them because they don't really know nothing about us. No, 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 no. Now, I know the certain white folks that know more about us than they let on. They just don't have no place of doing it. But you got to be real with them. Like, come on, man. You know what's going on there. But Sweet Caroline, I tell you what Sweet Caroline is. So, I don't know how many interracial weddings you have been to, but there's a couple of types of them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I really feel like you can break them down into two wings, and it depends on, like, what kind of black folks you're dealing with. And so you've got the interracial wedding that is with somewhat bourgeois black family, typically on the groom's side, and then the white mom, you know, the white bride side that's over there, right? Now, the DJ at that party is looking at the black guests and very often recognizing, oh, okay, they have lots of things in common with these white people. And so when Sweet Caroline comes on, it becomes a big old sing-along, right? Because the black people that grew up around those white people have heard Sweet Caroline many, many times, and it has become their jam because it makes everybody happy who is around. But then there is the other kind of interracial wedding, which is these black people over here do not hang out with white people at all, and perhaps are a little disappointed that this affair is even taking place. Right?
And the bride at the second get down got a slanty haircut. And her hair is probably dyed blonde. And
oh, no, 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 no. See, that's the thing. The bride, I'm talking about the second one because I'd forgotten that.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
that
that's the third,
wing,
that's
right?
The third so one. To, okay, like, my bad.
Yeah, we might have the third one. Good call. But this one is just like regular old white folks, and the dance floor runs in shifts.
So these ones, the bride and groom met in college on this one. The first one,
the bride
and groom met in high school. Oh, they didn't go to college. They met in the neighborhood.
Yeah, they met in college or they met at a bar somewhere. In fact, everybody's like, damn, where'd y'all meet? You know what I'm saying? But the white folks don't know no black people. The black people don't know white people.
Right.
And the dance floor runs in shifts. And I went to a wedding like that once. And DJ Mike Hitman, my guy, was the DJ. And just so you know what kind of wedding DJ Mike Hitman is, the first song was Erotic City. That's how he starts DJing at the wedding. But anyway, it was running in shifts. And then Mike was like, yo, we got to bring the people together. Hall & Oates. He put that Hall & Oates on, and suddenly everybody got out there. Hall & Oates in the G-Funk. They bring the people together. Hall & Oates for the next Super Bowl, since we already got our G-Funk Super Bowl coming up.
The only interracial weddings I've been to is the slanty haircut ones, which is essentially, if you close your eyes, you just feel like you had a black wedding. Like, I think those are the ones that I've been to. I haven't been to... I guess some, yeah, I didn't make too many friends in business school because I feel like if I went to any of those interracial weddings, those would be the Sweet Caroline you play all the way throughout jams. But I think I only go to the slanty haircuts.
Yeah, I haven't been to a shave sides wedding. Like now that you mentioned that, I have not been there. Like, I went to Pablo's wedding, and that was interesting because it was an interracial wedding without a black person in it. But the first dance was Let's Stay Together because they are that Obama generation. You know what I'm saying? They're like, yo, I heard this new song. It's great. Let's Stay Together. Are you familiar with it? I don't know if that's actually the case there, but I do feel like a whole bunch of white folks learned about Let's Stay Together, and I'm like, yo, we all know the words to it from the womb.
I was singing Shy during the break at Get Up, and Greeny was like, what's that? I was like, wait till the next break. Put that thing on. And Greeny was like, ooh, this is nice. He played some Beatles songs. Like, of course I've heard of them. I'm like, yeah, I know this. I heard it, yeah, because I'm immersed in your culture. But you don't know Shy? You only need to know one song when it comes to Shy, by the way.
Hold on now. Let's be fair, though. Like, the Beatles-Shy comparison.
Oh, no. Unacceptable. I will not stand for this. I will not stand for this sacrilege. That one song, Find a Black Person, our age or around,
song is as ubiquitous
as any Beatles song, but I'm with you. I understand the difference there.
The thing with the Beatles is I'm always curious when I hear people and what their Beatles jams are, just because it lets me know what their recreational drug history is. What is your favorite Beatles song, or what's that Beatles thing? Like, that really leans into... So, like, how you be getting down?
What's the octopus song? The people who listen to that song, what they be on? You know what I'm talking about? I'd like to be.
Octopus Garden. The thing about Octopus Garden is, like, it kind of works in the context of the album that it's in. Okay. But that I actually feel like the people who like that wing of Beatles stuff is so small. Yeah. Like, everybody I know that even rocks with the Beatles, they be winding up complaining about them weirdo old-timey songs. Now, I Am the Walrus. That's
Psychedelics?
That's a lot of drugs.
Oh, it's everything.
yeah, that's a lot of drugs. Like, psychedelics, definitely. Like, that's when you go to I Am the Walrus, it's like, oh, okay, cool. I see what your get down is.
I mean, just the cover of that, I'm getting high looking at the cover. I Googled it up to look at it. Like, ooh, I just went to a special place.
Nah, I like giving people's Beatles runs because I think especially for black folks, it becomes real easy to just be like, the Beatles are whack. Once you get in it, it's kind of like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. Because you're thinking about, I want to hold your hand, right?
Yeah,
when people, like, they think that, and it's like, no. I'll tell you this too. I went to the Beatles Cirque du Soleil show in Vegas. I'm actually going twice to that. And it knocks. Like, that's the thing about that show is when you get in there, you have to listen to the Beatles on a for real sound system or something, because the digital versions of their stuff over from analog do not translate very well. So, like, when you get Beatles on vinyl, it's like, oh, okay, so this actually goes hard, because it didn't sound like it goes hard when you think about the stuff that you see in the commercials. But nah, they got a little more than people want to give them credit for.
Mike, I give them some credit. Mike got me on this Rick Rubin, Paul McCartney Hulu series where they're talking about the stuff. And I mean, it's incredibly interesting and incredibly talented guys, both of them, obviously. And it gives you a new respect for, like, not a new respect because people respect the Beatles, but people like me who didn't grow up on the Beatles and, like, would automatically recoil at the idea at anybody bumping Beatles in the car on the way to school or on the way to a party or something. Like, it gave me a new appreciation for how unique, like, all their albums were and, like, how different the styles were, and Mike was telling me kind of the reason why he believes they're the greatest band is because, like, they were four different bands at different times, and that early stuff, like that boy band stuff off the Jump Street, that's the corny stuff that people think about, but they got deep.
Yeah, well, the other part of it too is on a lot of the stuff, like late 60s in particular, they were kind of first, so they were ahead of the game in terms of studio recording and technology and all of that, but they went from we are basically just covering R&B acts from the U.S. to now we turn this into something that is, like, uniquely ours and don't nobody else sound like this. And then there's a whole, it's like Chuck Berry. You don't realize how dope Chuck Berry is because everybody after him sounded like him, right? Who's that? Rakim is a great example of that, where you might not appreciate Rakim now because they're like, yo, X, Y, and Z raps like that. Yeah, he made everybody want to rap like he raps.
That's fair. Rakim was a turning point in hip-hop as far as, like, hip-hop is going this way. He was like, nah, we going this way. And everyone followed. And everything after that feels like some variation of it. But thinking about that Hulu series just makes me think about, like, the difference between artists and entertainers, you know, and like when you listen to how difficult it is to do. And I mean, I guess this is fair to say for just about any profession, is everything looks easy until you try to do it. Like, I can't imagine things, and it sounds easy until you try to do it. And I'm trying to think, is there anything that I have not done that I feel like I could do at a professional level just like today, just walk out there and do it? And I feel like that's how, to tie it back to sports a little bit, is like, all of us talk about sports like we know what we're doing, but right. Y'all can't do it at that level. I can't anymore either.
Yo, well, you know the thing everybody think they could do in sports? Shoot 70% from the free throw line.
Dummy.
Like, somehow they have concluded that they could shoot 70%. From the free throw line. Because everybody's supposed to be able to shoot 70% from the free throw line. And they swear when they was in high school, they was 70, 75% shooters from the free throw line. Every single one of them. And some of y'all were playing in front of 75 people. Yeah. You know
what
I'm saying?
With no money on
some
the line.
Of them were.
With nothing of significance on the line. Yeah, okay.
Right, didn't catch no flight to get in at 4 o'clock in the morning. Or whatever it was, right? They all swear they could do it. Wow, we've been all over the place. We both wanted to get on something. I wanted to ask you about it while I'm thinking about it, before I forget, before we run out of time. What'd you think about Mike Tomlin not being here for y'all trying to make him go to USC?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like, I mean, Mike Tomlin gives a great press conference either way. So, like, I was really interested in what he was saying without saying it. And like, you can put whatever you want in the breach, because the coaches that he named were white coaches who are, I mean, I guess in his class, but certainly not better than him. And like, it was Carson Palmer who put it out there. And like, Mike Tomlin can't be mad at the reporters for asking it. It's kind of their job to ask that if it's out there. Like, that's fine. Carson Palmer threw it on the table, was saying that maybe he would go to USC or something like that. And to me, what Carson Palmer was doing is he's in those rooms and they're throwing names around in those rooms. And I guess I want to hear all the names, like say all the names, because the reason why it feels uncomfortable is like, normally in this situation, you name coaches who are up and coming college coaches or maybe failing NFL coaches. Those are the only people, or maybe you steal a talented college coach from one program, like James Franklin is a guy who makes sense, but you don't. And I can't think of any other time where a successful NFL Super Bowl champion coach who's having a decent season, who's never had a losing season, who there's no reason to believe would be fired anytime soon or would want to leave his job, was attached to that. And I think that Mike Tomlin's offended because he's like, what else I got to do? Like, for y'all to respect me, to think of me in this way. And even though he's never had a losing season, like, I remember a couple years ago, people were like, maybe his message has gotten stale. He's not the tactician that Bill Belichick is. Like, he's a player's coach. Like, all types of thorny language that people apply to Mike Tomlin that it feels like they do not apply to other people. So I felt like that's what he was reacting to.
Yo, so I felt like that players coach thing is probably at the core of all of it. Because what I stay hearing when I mention this on Twitter with people is this response. Well, Mike Tomlin would be a beast on the recruiting trail. And I'm like, dog, Mike Tomlin ain't going to be leaving his house to go do no damn recruiting.
Terrible at recruiting.
yeah. Like, he might be able to wrap it up on the back end. But it's that idea, basically, is like the black kids would like to, you know, go play for this dude. Like, that's what I wonder if people subconsciously are saying that. Because I honestly don't find Mike Tomlin to be nearly as charming as everybody else does. No. Not that I have a problem with him, but he don't be saying nothing. He's stern as hell. He ain't got no jokes. Yeah. Like I'm sure he's cool to kick it with, but he ain't showing us that in anything that we getting in public. But I thought it was exactly what you said. The two coaches that he mentioned were coaches who had won a Super Bowl and had a tenure of a similar length, although, you know, Reed's goes farther back, obviously, you know, with the Eagles days. But I thought that that was the point that he was making, is nobody would ever think that those guys would take what is clearly and what he obviously deems to be a step down. And he's got the job with the most job security in the NFL. So they talking about him going to USC. Let me look at something right fast. Okay. So since 1969, USC has fired 7 coaches. Since 1969, the Steelers haven't fired a single one. They have hired three. Haven't fired one. And look, you could be like, yeah, Chuck Noll won 4 Super Bowls. He did, but he went out with like 4 out of 5 losing seasons, and they did not fire him. Bill Cowher had a run there where they got to the Super Bowl that one time, but they couldn't get over that hump, and then had 3 straight seasons where they missed the playoffs. A lot of places you get fired for that, right? Like, this has gone as far as it's going to go. Nope. Bill Cowher kept his job and eventually got to quit on his own terms. I'm supposed to leave that to go recruit?
Doesn't make sense at all. He was like, the one thing that I disagreed with him with was no booster got a blank check big enough. Like, okay, maybe, maybe for you, maybe this is about prestige or something, but like, you don't say there isn't a number, because I feel like everybody got a number. What if, I don't know where Jeff Bezos went to college, but what if he wanted his school, probably went to Stanford or something out west. What if he wanted them to be good at football? He'd be like, hey, I'm going to give you a hundo a year. Maybe I consider it. Maybe I give it a look. That's what I want to happen. But the players coach thing, I wanted to touch on this. You mentioned it a second ago. It's like people online say Mike Tomlin is a players coach. It's not just online. Like, I feel like analysts do that too. And the reason why that feels like dog whistle, inadvertent or not, is because Mike Tomlin doesn't fit the definition of a players coach. You know, so like players coach normally means a guy who is like easy go lucky and is like smiling, happy, and like taking days off practice and like making excuses for guys. When you use it as a pejorative, that's what it means. When you're about to fire somebody and you call them a players coach, it means that they're a little too soft on the players. Like, that's what they talked about Brian Billick before they went and got Harbaugh, who came in there and was like the opposite and was much closer to what we view Mike Tomlin as. So, like, that's what feels like racially tinged to me, is like saying Mike Tomlin is a player's coach when at no point does anybody hear like Mike Tomlin is easy to play for or really soft. It's what you're saying is he's black. He looks like them. You know, like, he is more like them than he is like management. Like, he's a player's coach.
Look. Ask Antonio Brown and Mike Wallace if they think that Mike Tomlin is a player's coach. What was it? Two dogs, one bone, right? That was what they told them at practice about each other. Two dogs, one bone, right? We got an extension for one of y'all. Two dogs, one bone. And I remember Mike Wallace like, I don't want that extension. Antonio Brown was like, I do. Like, one time, I remember one time the radio station in Houston was giving away concert tickets. I can't remember who the tickets were for. And somebody called up, the 9th caller, right? And dude was like, all right, you got that new DJ Quick CD. She was like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought it was the tickets. I was calling in for the tickets. And she hung up. Next commercial break, somebody called in. Hey, man, if she don't want that DJ Quick CD, I do, right? Like, no, I would like that copy of Way Too Funky, actually. Let me get that. But no, that is not. The players coach thing is obviously just this idea that the black players will respond better to the black coach, which, by the way, tells you just how racist hiring is in the NFL, because y'all legitimately believe that. But also, y'all must really think black people can't coach at all, because even with that belief, you still won't hire them, right? But also, hey, man, them dudes don't be listening to black people more. In fact, in some cases, they'll listen less.
Because all that ingrained judgment and prejudice, like, it don't only get ingrained in white people. So, like, it's something that we all exist in, and it impacts us all. But that's, I think it's also because it's paired with, like, they are like the players, so they are not as smart as the coaches. So,
correct.
We're hiring a player to be our coach.
But hold on. But it's not just the prejudice angle, because I think there's obviously something to that. But I think it is people respond to the cues that the world around them provides. And the world around us provides the cue that black folks ain't really to be respected. You don't have to respect a black dude. Like, if you choose to respect a black dude, it's because you being nice. You don't have to. And black people know and understand that too. I don't have to respect you, right? Now, you should just on GP, but the same world the white folks live in that's telling them that stuff, y'all telling us too. Went out of your way to tell us that stuff, as a matter of fact. And if we try to tell you otherwise, you get a little salty, you know? And so all that comes together, and then you get Mike Tomlin up there like, nah, dog, I've had enough of this. Y'all ain't gonna ask me about coaching no damn USC anymore? Because, I gotta tell you, I wouldn't want to be no college coach if I were him either. But if you tell me I can go live in L.A. after living in Pittsburgh for 15 years, baby, I'm on the first thing smoking.
I know. I was on the show, Get Up Feinbaum was on, and he mentioned how he thought James Franklin was the front runner. And James Franklin recruited me at Maryland, and he's having a lot of success at Penn State. And, I hope he gets the job. But that's the same situation. What's worse than Pittsburgh? Happy Valley. Get up out of there if you can, James. And he has proven that he can rebuild a form of power. So he seemed like the right guy for the job. Sign him up.
He would probably be the guy that I would hire. I would just like to make the note that program has not had a black quarterback in 32 years. Therefore, the idea that they're going to go all the way to black coach is a little tricky for me to wrap my mind around.
Desperate times,
and I never know what it is that makes people find. Yeah, I don't know. You never know what it is that makes people find Jesus on these matters. But no, they're not going to find somebody that would be better for that job than Franklin. And look, man, Franklin put his recruiting down there at USC, and whoo, baby, it could be something.
I bet. I can't wait to go to the parade. He better keep answering my phone calls. I'm going to be out there dancing on them floats. It's going to be so much fun. But I actually do think that he would do a good job out there. But I do know what it is that makes people find Jesus. It's desperation. That's when atheists start praying when they're looking down the barrel of a gun. And when you when you have not won enough games, you are not even in the postseason conversation, you can't even win conference titles on a regular basis, you start to get desperate. You're like, hey, what this black thing talking about? Let's see what this all about.
Well, hold up. Check this out. Something I didn't realize because I didn't pay no attention to who they made the interim coach at USC. But they did something you see, man. Like, sometimes you got to make history, and the best time to do it is with an interim coach. And that is why their interim coach is a gentleman named Dante Antonio Williams.
You hit me with Dante. I was like, I don't know. But you combine Dante with Williams. I'm good.
Yes.
I feel like if you would have gave me a DiVincenzo, I think you hit me with the last name that's Italian or something. I'm like, oh, all right.
Yeah. I had no idea. So, yeah, they made some history with their interim coach.
Can you imagine recruiting out there? So, now Franklin's in Happy Valley trying to get kids from New Jersey and kids from the South to come there. Then you go out to California. And, UCLA, yeah, they're a thing, but I don't think anybody – given all things being equal, you're going to take USC over UCLA, then...
Yeah, and it's harder to get in, too.
To get into UCLA? Oh, yeah. Really? I didn't realize that. I thought USC is private, though, right?
Yeah, but their football program, one thing historically with you... Let me be careful. Maybe I don't know exactly with USC, but one thing historically with UCLA is getting players in is not as easy there as it is in the rest of the conference. Not quite Stanford, but it's not as easy.
Can you imagine recruiting that whole coast? I'm trying to think of a place that I'd rather go, and I'm not deep in college football, but, I'm going to USC before I think about Washington. All things being equal, all things being equal, I'm going Washington, Washington State, Oregon, Oregon State, UCLA. I'm good. I'm going to USC.
Yo, this is my thing. In the era of FaceTime when you can still see your mama, I really don't know what it would be like for me if I were 17 and I'd never been to California. And then not only are you dropping me off in Los Angeles for the weekend, but I'm in Los Angeles for the weekend, and the goal is for everybody to impress me. When you have never been to California before, California feels literally you've just dropped off in paradise. It's nothing you've done is anything like this at all.
I remember my first time in California. I remember my first time. It was in San Diego. And I was like, why do white people hide this from us? The weather was perfect every day. Everyone was beautiful. I was like, where are the overweight people and the poor folk? This is marvelous. I was in a place called La Jolla. I don't know what that means in whatever language, assuming it's Spanish, but it felt like it meant heaven. It was outstanding. Yeah. And the same thing, first time I went to LA, LA, there's some rough parts, but it just feel different.
Duh, but even the rough parts got palm trees. That's how you get got. Right? You go to a bad neighborhood in LA in the afternoon, you can be fooled. You come back at night and you can't see that manicure lawns, you can't see the palm trees, and you whoa, this is, I was just here today. What is this?
bloods got lawnmowers out there. Like, gangsters gotta mow their lawn. They out here trimming their hedges. That's not something we are used to on the East Coast.
No, man. Like, you get out there, and if you ain't got to worry about money, you know, but you get out there, and it's just, I don't know how they would ever lose. Like, right now, it's just sign me up.
Think about the NIL money that you could get out there. If USC was good, the quarterback at USC, swimming in it. Then on top of it, like, all the celebrities that are out there, I guess maybe it's changing now that there's an NFL team out there. But, like, USC, they be pumping out people into the entertainment industry who also are fans of that team. And you bring a recruit, bring the number one recruit out there and have all them people show up. I am signing. I might try to change my name and get back in shape.
Dog, then you be out there like, excuse me, I don't mean to be rude. I'm not from around here, but like, what country is your parents from? Like, I can't, like, I'm looking at you and I can't really put all these things together that's going on here. They're like, it looked like you got four parents. Like, they from four different places. I don't really, like, could you draw out the Punnett square made you look like that? Like, I've never seen anybody with this combination of phenotypical attributes. It's just never come around.
So I've never been on USC's campus, but it tends to be the case anywhere when you walk on a college campus. Like, the people are in their prime. Like, the men are fit and handsome. The women are beautiful. And that's everywhere in LA, just about everywhere. Like, everyone is more attractive than the rest of the world. So I'm wondering, like, you drop yourself on a college campus in the heart of LA that is like a feeder system for the entertainment industry. I don't think I could leave. At 38, I got enough experience that I could muster up the gumption to grab myself by the collar and drag myself back to the airport. But at 16? Nah. It's like Sunshine. I'm gonna have to make a call, just like in not Sunshine, the football player. I'm talking about Harlem Knights.
Baby. Just want to let you know I ain't coming home.
Coming home.
Have a nice life.
Yeah, USC is like Sunshine.
But I do kind of think that it's kind of like people feel like that about University of Miami, which has it, but like the campus. It all depends on who you come across, man, because there's a lot of, shall we say, diligent students at USC. A lot of people that's there because they care about their hard work. That's what got them in there. That's what's going to power them through life. And what's going to make your visit is not elbow grease. Like, that's not, you know what I'm saying? Like that ain't quite going to be the game with it. That's where the HBCUs, you got a fight chance if you can just put together the right visit. I know I went to Clark based on a visit. I wasn't no athlete, but I got out there and I looked around the yard and I was like, oh, okay, sign me up. Didn't know.
There is a hierarchy in everybody's life of things that they're important. And when you're a 16-year-old heterosexual man dropping yourself on a college campus, there's one thing that you are checking for. And the HBCUs, they got it.
It's the best reason to pick a school. There is no... Look. Where you go for your undergraduate education is the most overrated decision you make in terms of that, how good the school is. They got a good engineer. The engineering program is as good as you are. Like, that is what people don't get. With graduate school, we talk about something a little different. And hey, who knows? Like, maybe you're going to be trying to get into, like, be a Supreme Court justice or something like that. And, you know, like, at those levels, those things kind of matter. But by and large, especially if you black, because you got to understand, when they go looking to hire black people, they don't go to where the white people are.
Yep.
They go to where the black people are. Like, they're like, oh, wow, I saw this black guy at USC. I didn't know they went there. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I met my wife in college. So it is a good reason she thought about it the same way you did, because she could have got into much better places, but she was like, I'll go to a good graduate school, but I'm going to stay close to home on this. But USC and Maryland don't have much in common, but the idea that it's in a city, that's something. So, like, I was talking to Jay Williams about this the other day and how he was like, man, I didn't go on a recruiting trip to Maryland, but I would go party with those guys on the basketball team and had regrets because, like, they come, you go to Maryland and after class, you could go down to the bars like college kids do, or you could go downtown and go to Dream. You could go to the clubs, you know, and get into clubs, and it's a whole different scene than, like, wearing your sweatshirt down to the bar.
Yeah. I hear you on that, and definitely the case. But Jay's mistake was not that he didn't go to Maryland. His mistake is that he went to
Duke. That's fair. Yeah.
If he went to Carolina, he would not be talking what he's talking right now. Ain't nobody ever been like, man, I went to Carolina and I regretted it. No, no, not on that level. Ain't nobody said that one time. The only reason the Duke guys don't say it is because they go kick it in Chapel Hill all the time.
And to be clear, he did say that he regretted it, but he didn't know that that existed. That, like, there was a college that was, like, in a city and you could, like, be in a real city, like, go to D.C. and really do grown-up things. But and USC, you. I'm sure. No, I mean, DC ain't nothing special like that. USC is like times 10.
Yeah. But the only thing, USC needs to be good. Because, man, if you ain't got no bread, dude, LA is like when Bruh Man talked about the glass refrigerator. He could see all them sandwiches, but it was locked. Like that's what LA, when you ain't got no bread. When I was in grad school out there and I didn't have no bread, I could kind of see what was going on, but I didn't appreciate it. First time I went out there on the expense account, man, it was like a whole nother place.
Malibu for the first time with my homeboy who got a place out there, got money, and I was like, this was after I'd already played in the league for a while. I was like, oh, so not only did y'all hide La Jolla from us, but you were hitting Malibu from us too. This is outstanding. Eating on the beach at Nobu. Goodness gracious. That thing about the glass refrigerator, though, that the first time I went to Vegas was in the league, and it was with Champ. He got long bread. I had a good time. Then I go back. I bring my brother and my cousin with me. It's their first time going to Vegas too. We do it a bunch of times, we have a great time. Then, like, I settled down and, like, getting a serious relationship, started getting married. I'm not going back to Vegas anymore, so they go back on their budget. And with their friends, they call me mad. Like, you should have never took us. This is terrible. I don't ever want to come to Vegas again without you. And that is that is the better have loved than lost. No, it's not. No, it is not.
They at the Excalibur, mad as hell.
It was so hot. It wasn't even that, because like the hotels in Vegas isn't where they hit you. They'll let you in the hotel just so that you can go downstairs and gamble. So they were in nice hotels, but they was gambling at the small tables. And then they go to the club and they got to stand in line. And then when you're in the club, you got to stand at the bar to try to talk to people. But it's a whole different experience when you are buying a table. Let's say, or when you are gambling at the big money tables, the drink hostess comes around a little more often. Everything changes a little bit.
And on that note, that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out, theundefeated.com. Check him out on Debatable, Foxworth Fridays, every Friday here. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassane and Dave Presley handle things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.